Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films Damsel, Mountain, and Whitney. It's all yours.
Thank you. Yeah, apparently a signal has come down from the planet Serendipity saying that at this exact moment, one-word titles will be the order of the day, because that's what we have this week, is three one-word titles of movies that are currently playing. So let us begin with Damsel, which is our fiction film. The other two are documentaries, at least documentaries. One of them is a documentary sort of a sort. Damsel is a Western, and every once in a while we have a Western. Last year there were two or three fairly major releases, not hits, but, you know, they got some attention, that were Westerns. And now this year, I think this is pretty much the only one, at least the only one to get any sort of notice, Damsel. And it was written and directed by the brother team. There's a number of brother teams out there in movie land these days, David Zellner and Nathan Zellner. And interestingly, they not only wrote and directed it, but they also are actors in it. David Zellner plays the very important role of a parson, who is quite a major character, in a way almost the most major character in the movie. And Nathan Zellner plays a somewhat smaller role, but he's still in there. So we have here a sort of a triple threat team. Again, it is a Western, and Robert Pattinson plays a guy who at the very, very beginning of the movie has a conversation with a preacher, not the parson I just mentioned, but a different preacher, in this case played by Robert Forster, and ends up getting a hold of the preacher's clothing. I may come back to that in a moment. And he then goes off into he's headed out west from the east, where he's had some bad experiences. And he heads out into the west, now in his preacher's garb, where he is taken for a preacher. And he accepts a job, which is to perform a marriage for a man named Samuel, played by Robert Pattinson, and his fiancée, whose name is Penelope. And she is played by Mia Wasikowska, although Mia Wasikowska does not show up until way into the movie. I think pretty much the second half of the movie she finally shows up. So that's the basic setup, is that we have this guy who is not really a preacher, although not much is made of that. He knows sort of how to behave like a preacher. And he is headed out into the Old West with this guy Samuel to find his fiancée Penelope and perform this marriage. So for the whole first part of the movie, we have Parson Henry and Samuel headed out west and developing a sort of a quirky relationship. And then eventually they find Penelope, who has supposedly been kidnapped by a very bad guy. It turns out she hasn't been kidnapped at all. She totally loves the man that she is living with. But then all kinds of things happen, and there's some violence, although not particularly sanguinary. It's not all that awful to look at. And then the movie eventually wends its way to a mildly unexpected conclusion. So the Damsel is an interesting movie. It's very low-key. As I mentioned, there's some violence, but it's not like – certainly not Sam Peckinpah violence. It's the other end of the scale from that. It's pretty mild, you know, some gunplay and that sort of thing. The thing about Damsel is that it seems to want to be quirky, and this is its problem. Is that every once in a while, I would say approximately every 10 minutes, maybe every 15 minutes, it throws in some little thing which is obviously supposed to be quirky. Oh, isn't that quirky? One is supposed to say to oneself. And almost every time they don't work. I think Damsel would be a much better movie if the filmmakers had simply played it straight. I'll give one example. The very first scene of the movie is this long conversation between the character of Samuel, played by Robert Patton, and this old preacher, played by Robert Forster. And they have this very slow thoughtful conversation. You find out some backstory for both of them, et cetera, et cetera. But we discover during this conversation that the old preacher is very disillusioned, and he wants to go back east, but the stagecoach doesn't seem to be showing up. And all of a sudden, in a sort of a fit of pique, he gets up, strips off all of his clothes down to his long underwear, throws these clothes which he has taken off, these preacher clothes, at this young man he has just met, and stalks off into the desert. The preacher's long underwear, his long johns, are sort of this bright color. And then he stalks off into the desert, basically. Now, this doesn't make any sense. There is no reason why he would be stalking off into the desert, probably to die, because he has nothing with him, not even clothes except his long johns. The long johns are these funny color which are supposed to make us apparently sort of giggle. It doesn't make any sense. It is just so self-consciously quirky, and the movie would be so much better if that sort of thing were not peppered throughout it. That said, I rather enjoyed Damsel. It's nice to see a Western every once in a while. This is a pleasantly low-key one. I just wish that the filmmakers had played it more straight, because it would be a more effective movie that way. Our next film, Mountain, is a documentary, but it's not the usual sort of documentary. Documentaries normally are trying to convey some sort of very specific information to us. You know, they're to tell us about something that is going on or has gone on in the world, or to tell us about the work of some great person. You know, the kind of thing documentaries are usually about. This is a somewhat different kind of documentary. It's what's sometimes called a film poem, a cine poem. And it's not so much there to get across information to us, and it doesn't really get across a whole lot of specific information. It's more to convey moods and feelings and emotions and that sort of thing. It is, as the title Mountain suggests, very much about mountains. And it has Willem Dafoe, who is a very wonderful actor, narrating it throughout. But again, it's not the sort of narration that is saying, and now here we see a view of Mount Everest. It's a poetic narration written by Robert McFarlane. And it's very, very poetic, or I should maybe say poetic-y. It's full of, it's kind of alternates between truisms, things he sort of knew anyway, and platitudes, things that are sort of obvious, and a whole lot of sort of poetic stuff. It's not bad, but I found it rather ponderous. Willem reads it very nicely, but I found it ponderous and kind of overbearing. But what makes the movie really worthwhile is the marvelous cinematography by Renan Ozturk. In a way, this movie, I should mention also right now that there is music by Richard Tognetti. Richard Tognetti is credited with the original score, and his name appears very, very prominently in the opening credits. But there's also a whole lot of the usual sort of poetic movie type music in it. I mean, like Vivaldi and Beethoven and stuff like that. So it's partly an original score and partly a sort of a compendium of certain very familiar classics, the Emperor Concerto, the Four Seasons, that sort of thing. Now, in a way, this movie reminded me of, only in certain ways, the narration is a very big difference because this movie has narration, but it reminded me of Godfrey Reggio's Koyaanisqatsi and the two movies that he made following that up, Poikatsi and Nakoikatsi, his famous Katsi trilogy. And the reason it's very similar is that in those movies, the idea was that the cinematography and the music and the overall direction would all be sort of equal partners in the movie. And that's very much the way it is here. The music is always there, even when the narration is going on, and often it's just music without narration. And then the cinematography is there. So we have the idea, in this case, a little bit different than the Katsi movies, we have the idea that the narration and the cinematography and the music are apparently meant to be roughly equal partners. The thing that really makes the movie is the cinematography. It's only about an hour and a quarter long, and which is, by the way, long enough. And in that time, we get these astoundingly beautiful views, apparently largely shot from helicopters, of all kinds of different mountains. I bring this up every time we have a mountain movie. I am a real acrophobe, and I do not deal well with heights, and it's one of those irrational things. And there are times in this movie when we are seeing mountaineers and mountain climbers and mountain scalers, when I, you know, my heart goes up into my mouth, and I sort of enjoy this. For me, it's the equivalent of a really scary moment in a horror movie. So there are moments like that that I rather had a good time at. that. And there's quite a few of them. The whole movie is not that, but there's quite a few of them. And those were the part I enjoyed best. My gosh, people way up about what appears to be about 10 million feet in the air, clutching their fingernails into little tiny crevices. And oh my gosh. Anyway, so that was all sort of interesting, and that's sort of fun, and that's sort of nice to watch. And I enjoyed that. There's also some interesting stuff about Mount Everest. At one point, you see all of the tourists who now scale Mount Everest with the help of all kinds of locals, and they're practically, you know, brought up there. And the narration rather wittily says, this isn't climbing, it's queuing. So there's, you know, there's some really nice things along the way, and I had a pretty good time watching mountain. And if you're interested in mountains, or if you're just interested in it, it's very much a nature documentary, and there's all kinds of stuff in the narration sort of celebrating nature. If that's the sort of thing that will appeal to you, then by all means go to see mountain, because it's a, you know, it's the cinematography alone, the amazing mountain views make it really, really worth watching. And our final movie, Whitney, which is about Whitney Houston. Now, I have never been an admirer of Whitney. I'm not an admirer. I mean, sure, I admire what she accomplished during her all too brief life. I've never enjoyed her music very much. I've never enjoyed the way she used her voice or playing with it. I just never sort of have enjoyed her music a whole lot, although I'm sure I'm angering many people out there in Films in Focus Land, because she has, of course, an incredible number of fans. And this movie definitely brings out all the success that she had, and it also deals, obviously, with the terrible problems with drugs and alcohol and so forth that ended her life all too early. We learn as the movie goes along that she did have a difficult upbringing. It seemed on the surface that her family life as a child and a young adult were pretty satisfactory. In fact, there turns out to have been some real abuse, including sexual abuse, by a female family member. And so we have that kind of thing being exposed in the movie. We then get an idea as to why her life went so terribly downhill, even when she seemed to be at the total peak of success and fame and everything else. And we also get an idea of how her career developed, her first record deal, and how things developed from there and so forth and so on. Interestingly, she came from a very musical family, including Dionne Warwick and Dede Warwick were cousins. Her mother, Cissy Houston, was herself a singer whose career never took off, but who molded Whitney Houston and by whom Whitney Houston was extremely influenced. All that kind of thing is in there. And then we get into the terrible decline of her life, the way that she just couldn't do anything for a while, her, you know, very rocky marriage to Bobby Brown. Rocky in some ways, apparently very pleasant in other ways. Her attempt at a comeback at one point, and boy, there's some footage from a comeback concert she did in one of the Scandinavian countries. And the video is not very good, which is surprising because it wasn't all that many years ago. But she practically sounds like she's croaking. And, you know, very, very sad things in this movie. Again, I have never been all that interested in Whitney Houston as a singer, but there are some things in the movie that I found very interesting. One thing that I really enjoyed was the portion about the Star Spangled Banner. She very famously sang the Star Spangled Banner at a Super Bowl, and there's some fascinating stuff about this. Before her, there was a year when Marvin Gaye did it. I believe it was maybe the previous year, and he did something very innovative, very much in keeping with the kind of gospel roots of his music and of Whitney Houston's own music. Marvin Gaye changed the Star Spangled Banner, which is basically in three-quarter time, a three-beat, "Oh Say Can You See by the Dawn's Early Light," and changed it to 4/4, which is the always rhythm of, or, you know, the time signature of gospel music. And that allowed him more freedom, more ability to throw in his own little riffs and quirks and the various kinds of, you know, to play with his voice a little bit. And so Whitney Houston picked up on that and did the same thing, and it worked very well for her. And I must say, I've never had any use for the Star Spangled Banner, among other things. It's famously bad as a piece of music, almost impossible to sing properly and all that. And even though I had never liked the Star Spangled Banner at all, you know, the music, the movie shows her singing it at the Super Bowl, and I really found it quite stirring. She did a splendid job with that. I think it's one of the best things that she ever did. And again, that sort of musical lore is really what's most interesting about the movie, when things like that come out. Also, very interesting things. "I Will Always Love You," again, I'm not very fond of her recording of that, but it remains, I believe, the top female hit of all time. She also has a record, which I think remains unequal, for number one songs. This is mentioned at the very, very end of the movie. One little tidbit, which I rather found interesting, was that I Will Always Love You. Saddam Hussein, at his last election campaign, used an Arabic version of I Will Always Love You as his theme song. So, again, interesting little factoids like that crop up in the movie. So, again, I've never been very interested in Whitney Houston as a singer, but I found the movie perfectly absorbing. I enjoyed watching it. And if you're interested in her, I recommend it. And if you're not interested in her, it's a very dramatic, true-life story. So that is my semi-documentary story, my story this week, Jill.
For which we thank you, as always, David Starrett, Films in Focus, the films Damsel, Mountain, and Whitney.